Happy Monday. Excuse me. I was going to say I have a morning cold today, so bear with me. I'm Larry Jacobs. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today. You probably hear it in my voice. And welcome to today's show on Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We've got our good friends from ALAS, the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, all those people being in Pre-K-12. Okay, and it's always great to have Dr. Maria Armstrong, who's their executive director and one of my favorite people in all the shows I do. And she has brought with her Leslie Torres Rodriguez, who is the superintendent of schools in a damn good city, which is Hartford, Connecticut. Okay, and if you've never been there, it's a fun part of the world. Okay, Mark Twain's house, for example. Okay, so we're going to talk to them. They've got a mental wellness report that they've done, and we're going to get some information on that. As you all know, SEL is a big deal for us here at our Consortium for Equity in Education. We produce a website called seltoday.org. We do a lot of work at SEL, which we think is an equity question. Okay, so we're always happy to present stuff like this. The mental wellness part of going back to school this year is huge. All right, and superintendents and principals are very, very concerned about it. A lot of them are putting the ESSER dollars right into that. Okay, so we're going to have a nice conversation with Maria and Leslie in just a few minutes. And boy, I really apologize for this stuffy voice I have today. I can hear it as I'm speaking. All right. Anyway, I'm Larry Jacobs. We'll archive the show at ace-ed.org, which is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Everything we do is linked over there, so please go to ace-ed.org, the new issue of our magazine, our online journal, the back-to-school issue. That's called Equity in Access Pre-K-12. That just was put up last week, so please, or 2 weeks ago, I guess now. Please go over, check it out. It's a very, very fine issue. We have our Excellence in Equity Awards program. We've actually extended that, but I hate to say it sounds stupid by popular demand, but it was true. So we extended the nomination period. Please, if you're working with equity colleagues, products you're working with, companies that work in equity, all that sort of thing, nominate yourself, nominate a colleague, nominate a school, et cetera, et cetera. Check it all out under the awards icon at ace-ed.org. SELtoday.org is over there. We're very concerned. We'll talk to Maria and Leslie about this, about teacher retention and the educator shortage. And we have teacherretention.com, which is some great professional development that we offer to school districts. And, of course, we'll archive the podcast over there. So everything's at ace-ed.org. And now enough of me blabbing about all the stuff we do. Let's find out what ALAS is doing. And I'll introduce my friend Maria first. Hi, Maria. Welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, Larry? And I'm sorry to hear that you're feeling under the weather, but I wish you a speedy, speedy recovery from that.
I feel fine. The vast bulk of me feels fine. It's just my nose, okay, that seems to be rather stuffy today. So it's only about 5% of me, so I'm pretty happy. Not that I have that big a nose. Probably about 2%, actually. Okay, right, so it's just weird. Just I feel stuffy, but I feel fine. Okay, Leslie, are you there?
Well, good.
Yes, I am here. Thank you for having me, Maria. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. It's a pleasure
Likewise.
To have you here. Nice to meet you. Is it Dr. Torres Rodriguez?
That is me, yes.
Okay, I didn't know you were Dr. or Ms. or whatever, so I just wanted to make sure I had to confirm that. Okay,
thank you.
To be sure. And I'm going to start very simple. First of all, Maria, just tell us about ALAS, the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents. Just give the overall for everybody.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick thumbnail on that one, Larry.
Yeah, sure.
You know, our organization is going into its 19th annual summit here in October, meaning our convening of folks.
Where will that be?
In San Juan, Puerto Rico.
There you go, Puerto Rico, my favorite island.
I know. We're hoping that Larry's going to be out there to do a live podcast while he's...
I'm looking at it. So, yeah. Anyway, October, Puerto Rico National Conference, ALAS. Sounds fabulous.
Yeah. And the association is really founded on three pillars, and those are for policy advocacy, information mobilization through networking, and professional growth and leadership development. You know, there's a misnomer that you have to be Latino to be a part of the organization.
Yes.
And what we continuously remind folks is that what better organization to gain the perspective of how to love and serve our Latino kids.
That's right.
Because the vast majority are members from Hispanic or Latino background, but who better than to gain that perspective having gone through many of the things that our children continue to go through. And so as a national organization, we hold a variety of opportunities in which to engage.
I think that's great. And by the way, just so everybody understands that, and I think they do, our audience does, but just in case, approximately what percentage of students nationally, okay, are Latino?
Yeah, so, you know, we're at about that 30% mark, you know, 30, 30, 30,
Yeah.
And in a few years, and I say a few years because the years seem to go by pretty quickly these days, that, you know, they'll be hitting that 50% mark here shortly.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think it's the fastest growing demo in the United States. Okay, it's Latino
it is.
People. Mm-hmm. I think it is. So, and obviously, Latino students, and I'm preaching to the choir here, are everywhere. Okay, and let's find out in Hartford, Leslie, what's the percentage of Latino students in Hartford, Connecticut?
The majority of our students, 57%, are identify as Hispanic and Latino. Oh yeah,
wow.
So lots of work here and trying to, you know, leverage, for example, partnerships like the ones we have with ALAS and our local affiliates. Absolutely.
Absolutely, and you probably didn't think that number was going to be that high in Hartford. That's interesting. Okay, so over 60%. Of the public school students in Hartford, Connecticut, damn good town, by the way, okay, in Hartford, Connecticut, are of Hispanic origin, correct?
Wow. Correct, 57%, yes, and
wow.
Growing.
Wow, amazing, all right, just amazing, okay, which makes my point that we're not talking about the borderplex along New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas anymore in California. It's everywhere in the country. Okay, and we have to deal with this. And that's why what Maria said is so important, okay? You don't have to be of Hispanic origin, okay, to belong to ALAS, because you need the perspective, okay, of the Latino culture, if I may, to get into these kids' heads and engage them fully, okay, and get them prospering and succeeding and all that sort of stuff. Tell us, Leslie, about Bragg a little bit. Tell us about maybe your background, but also Hartford Public Schools beyond the demo there.
Yes, so I happen to be a product of the school system. So when my family migrated from Puerto Rico to Hartford, Hartford happens to be a gateway city for new arrivals, right? It was back when I arrived in the early 80s, and it still is now. And so, it was this hub, and we continue to actually have one of the largest Hispanic, specifically Puerto Rican demographic in the state.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Correct, yeah. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we leverage not only our Hispanic and Latino population and cultures, but we have,
for example,
84 languages that are spoken across our schools.
Yeah.
And we want to not only leverage that, but, you know, make sure that we're providing the services that all of our students need so that they can have that equal access and opportunity.
Yeah, is that important to getting that balance, et cetera. And I'm curious about this. I always love to ask this question because we're real concerned about teacher retention, what the teacher population is like these days. Okay, we'll just use 60%. Okay, at least of the kids are Latino, Hispanic origin. Okay, and I'm curious. Okay, what's your faculty and staff? How's that demographic go? And, you know, this is a major change. They have to understand the culture. Teachers are great at that. But what's going on with that? Let's see.
So that is a great question, and it's actually almost like an inverse. So first, Hartford happens to be the district. So Connecticut has 159.
It sounds like Maria's driving a streetcar. Maria, what's
yeah.
all that noise back there?
I don't know where the background is.
Right. Maria?
Oh, there you go.
Maria?
I just muted myself.
Oh, okay. Okay. Get Maria's hobby, a lot of people don't know that, is driving streetcars through the streets of Washington. That's what that noise was. Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Les.
So Connecticut has 169 municipalities. And so our school district happens to be the one with the highest number in terms of diversity of staff. At only 27%, just my first for teachers, certified teachers. So it's almost like the inverse of, right, the demographics that we have, because 88% of our students are students of color. The majority of 57% that I said, Latino, Hispanic and Latino. And it's even smaller, the percentage, about 13% for teachers that are Hispanic and Latino. And so we have a long ways to go, and we actually have a program, and I will kind of, you know, pat ourselves on the back, which is, it's called the Paso a Paso program, which is, you know, a very intentional recruitment program in which we leverage our partnerships in the island of Puerto Rico, and we developed a bilingual, bicultural, and biliterate recruitment program for teachers. And we just welcomed a cohort from Puerto Rico to Hartford, but we still have a long ways to go.
So when you say you welcomed a cohort, are they visiting or are they going to become your teachers this year?
They are teachers. They are teachers. We intentionally have the partnerships with higher ed and our colleagues on the island, and they just went through our four-day teacher induction program, and so they're part now of our family. So we have 16.
And how many came in on the cohort?
It was 16. It was a pilot. We aimed for 10, very small to start, and then, you know,
that's
we got 16, and it was privately funded, and we're going to continue. This is not just a regular, you know, going to Puerto Rico and just, you know, hiring people. This is truly paso a paso, which means step by step, supporting them and building a network of support, which, by the way, is the best practice when we serve our students, right? We build a system of support for students and their families. So we're doing the same thing with our adult learners.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And I want to talk to you more about that at some other point, okay? That is absolutely terrific, okay? I'm very, very impressed with that, I have to tell you.
Good.
Okay, I think it's great. All right, and so it's so important these days. I just can't say enough on that. That is great, okay? And I want to go back to Maria. Maria, I couldn't find it on the website. It disappointed me. Totally, we're going to talk about SEL and mental wellness, okay? And you guys, I want you to talk about this, Maria. You guys did a study, okay, about mental wellness. And I assume that's for Latino students, but it might also be for Latino teachers or whatever. What was tell us about the study, Maria, Dr. Armstrong, the one and only.
Yeah,
she is the one and only.
I apologize for the background noise there. I'm currently traveling, so forgive me here.
It's okay.
You know,
there is none now, so it's great.
ALIS commissioned Hanover Research to do a comparative study. And the reason was because, you know, from a visceral standpoint, we knew that there was something afoot. But we needed the quantitative as well as the qualitative data to support what we were all observing, thinking, and feeling. And so in this study that we commissioned, it being a comparative study, it was across the board and across nationally. So parents, teachers, students, administrators, and superintendents were surveyed through a lengthy process so that we would have the numbers to validate the study. But we commissioned it last spring, and what we found was by doing a comparative study, we were able to look at all of those factors and then pull from that the Latino, Hispanic information, as well as being able to disaggregate other populations so that we could see in contrast, you know, what was going on.
And what's going on, if I may ask?
Well, you know, and to no one's surprise, a whole lot's going on underneath, right? You know, I think probably one of the, for me, in taking a look at this, there's just so many variables, but some of the things that stood out to me was the percentage of Hispanic Latino students feeling moderately to extremely stressed or anxious is 77% is higher than the percentage of non-Hispanic Latino students who were, you know, similarly at 70%. So, you know, a lot of the students felt that they identified mental health and difficulty of schoolwork or academics as one of the main stressors, which, it also corresponds to during the pandemic, those influences of maybe one or both parents or caregivers lost their jobs during that time. That added to the stress as well because, you know, absolutely. That family unit staying intact. It doesn't just lie on the adults. It trickles down. It has an impact, and can be very obviously it's very traumatic for kids. So there were a lot of those kinds of correlations that we found as well. But it was definitely higher than that of their counterparts.
And if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure about this, but during the pandemic, when we were counting all those people who died, okay, I believe the numbers were higher. Among certainly African American people, but I believe Latino. Am I correct, Maria? Do you know? Was the number?
Yeah,
passed away.
They were.
Higher.
Both. It was higher. Correct. And you know that has a direct effect on a whole other set of issues. Yeah, access to healthcare, preventative healthcare. That's always a mind-boggling one to me. It's like we would rather pay on the back end. Thousands and millions of dollars, but we wouldn't pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for preventative when people want to go take care of themselves or want to have access to things. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of room for growth here, and I think that what the study has done is validated to some degree that there are certain things, even with college and career readiness, you know, we think we're doing a good job, and I say we because as adults, we may put in these constructs or systems to operate in, but if the communication, like Dr. Leslie said, you know, when you have to look at the whole picture and look at what are your leverage points. And we don't see language as a deficiency when kids come in speaking something other than English. We see that as rich and dynamic because most kids that come from other countries, they know more than one language.
Yes,
and so we
right.
need to take a different approach and use that language to be able to communicate and figure out different modes of communication that are going to actually get the information to our students and to our parents. And we saw that as a gap. Leslie, didn't you see that too in the study?
Oh, yeah, I definitely saw it.
I was going to say, if only we had a superintendent here who could tell us what's happening in her district. Oh, wait, we do. Leslie, go ahead.
And so first I would tell you that, like Maria, I really wasn't surprised. Yes, the fact that 7 or 8 out of our students were identified moderate to extreme, you know, levels of anxiety. But this survey, locally for us, you know, when we did 50 hours of engagement with our stakeholders, students and families included, both groups identified social, emotional supports, wellness, mental health support as a need, both students and families. And so we try to prioritize early on via telemedicine, available counseling support for our students, and still found that throughout the both, you know, these last 2 years, we've had, you know, our teams have conducted 4,000 home visits. And one of the things that we continually find is that the students still identify the stressors in terms of their wellness, emotional, behavioral health, as do their families. And so we realize that we can't do this in isolation, to Maria's point, you know, leveraging partnerships locally and even nationally to identify trends and begin to develop programmings that, quite frankly, are going to be sustainable. I know you talked about ESSER, and we certainly are leveraging, you know, additional social workers, clinicians,
good.
Partnerships
good.
With community-based clinical agencies that are in our schools,
wonderful.
Servicing students and their families. But a lot of that will not be sustainable post-ESSER funding.
Right, right.
Which is the dilemma that we're going to have to solve for.
It is a real dilemma. You mentioned something a few minutes ago. I was curious about that because there was such a shortage of on-site, I'll start at the beginning, school nurses, There's a shortage of certainly educational psychologists, counselors, go right down the whole list, social workers, et cetera. And we all know that. And this is beyond just the classroom educator shortage. All right. And which is really a challenge as SEL becomes so predominant as a need. Okay. Whatever school districts want to call that, the skills of resilience and the skills of confidence. Okay. Whatever you call it, it's such a need out there right now. And every school district, okay, understands that. And you mentioned telehealth and all that sort of thing. And I'm just curious, how are we doing with the number of people who are available, okay, to help the students? That's question A. My second part of that is, as you speak to your educators, who, by the way, also are very stressed out, mm-hmm. okay, you know, how are they doing? And you know, even adult SEL is important. What are you seeing these days? How do we handle all this? And that's a big question. I'll give you doctorate number two if you can answer that one. Go ahead. Leslie.
No, these are the complexities.
By the way, that'll come from the University of Larry, which is not really accredited yet in Connecticut. But we're working on it.
Are the complexities that we are struggling with. We're grappling with these every single day. So you asked first about whether or not we had a shortage in terms of clinicians. I will tell you that we added 30 social workers on top of the 110 right. social workers that we right. have across our 39 wow. schools. And the shortages for us do not happen to be in those areas. We actually have certified teacher yeah. shortages in special education and speech yeah. and language therapy, which by the way, is not completely separate from the conversation we're having. Because
I agree
when
with
we
you.
Have, right, we have 22% of our students that require special education supports and services. And when you don't meet those needs, right, it adds up and perhaps exacerbates how their needs manifest, which most often is behaviorally, right? And then we get into this cycle of behavioral, you know, outbursts or inability to self-regulate, which spills into, right, classroom dynamics and so on and so forth, right? And so
it cuts into everybody's learning.
Yeah,
it cuts into everybody's learning, and it cuts into the teacher's attitude. Okay,
exactly.
If they have to
which,
deal with discipline
yeah.
as opposed to teaching kids to be literate and smart in their subjects. Okay, they have to deal with behavior problems. So,
it's hard for the adult to show up
yeah.
to show up in their best self.
Yep.
And so for us is trying to address, we call it a continuum of need, a continuum of supports that not only our students need with like tier one, like does every student feel that they have a trusted adult, right, that they can go to? Do their peers know what it looks like when a student is not showing up their best self, right? Because they are look force. There are signs. And this study said that, by the way, students would rather, right, seek support from a peer. That was one of the findings.
Wow.
And so these
wow.
are all things that we have to be mindful
wow.
of when we're thinking about the entire
wow.
spectrum, the continuum of social emotional support. Yes, clinical needs are necessary because we see some significant needs that students and their families have. But there is also a continuum that I believe, I think Maria talked about prevention, right, that we could always get better at on the front end.
You know, you say Maria so much better than I do with my stinky Philadelphia accent that I can't get rid of. You say Maria beautifully. I say Maria. Okay, that's flat A. Sorry, Maria. Okay, sorry about that. Maria, let me ask you a question. Nationally, okay, are Latino kids, and I think this would probably be the case, more stressed out, and I don't know if the study showed this, in a district that is not predominantly Latino? In other words, Hartford is predominantly Latino, and the kids are pretty stressed for a lot of good reasons, okay? But you go into another place, Manchester, New Hampshire, I'll say, where there's a huge Latino population, but it's not predominantly Latino, and I just made up that city as a source. What are you finding about that? Because that's something that's really, really important. Are Latino kids... do they feel engaged and part of the society wherever they are? Maybe that's the question. Maria, what'd you find?
Well, that's a really good question.
Thanks. You know,
one of the things that we did, like I said, a lot of this was something that from our perspective, from a visceral standpoint, we could identify with. But what we wanted to do is, okay, let's just go ahead and be non-biased in this and see what the numbers say to show that story, the other side of the story. And one of the areas that we found was even when the Latino teachers' perspective, and that they felt that when the kids, they were more welcomed by the kids that were Latino, they were more opened up to them. But the Latino Wow. kids on the comparative side did not feel comfortable opening up to, someone that may not know their background, that they didn't feel comfortable enough sharing that. But on the flip side,
it's a cultural difference.
One of the areas
it's a cultural
found,
difference.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. And from the
non-Latino teachers, that they were more, they felt that they responded that they were being, ultra helpful. They were very aware of the trauma, which was very counter to what the Latino kids were saying. So the non-Latino kids felt that way. The non-Latino teachers felt like that. But when it came to the Latino kids and the Latino teachers, it was obviously opposite. So oftentimes, and we say this so much, it's, We didn't just arrive here. we've been here. And the thing is that
I got big news for you. You were basically here first, okay?
There you go.
Piece of history. But you go ahead. Anyway.
Yeah.
You were Native American.
Well,
you were Native. Yeah, go ahead.
And I appreciate you sharing that, Larry.
Hello.
One of the things too is that if kids don't see representation in their own environment and it's isolated, so they go to school and they expect this, that, and the other out of kids, but yet they go home and they see, their first teachers, which are their caregivers, their parents, their siblings even. And so that it's that continuous work at how do we increase the representation in our schools so that we do have the opportunity to be able to connect just like our non-Latino students. And I'm talking for all students of color, not just Latinos, but the more representation, the more diversity we have in schools that reflect our kids, the more opportunities we have for those connections. And I
that's
think
right.
that's the thing that we've been behind when we've got 80% even of our school counselors that are gatekeepers to SEL, to academics oftentimes. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I mean that from a standpoint of being able to usher services and so forth. And when you have 80% of them that are non-Latino, you're already got a barrier, and we're all about removing barriers. So the more
That's
opportunities
right.
we bring into these settings where kids can connect, I think the better off our entire system will be.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly on that. My other question about your survey, okay, and I'm going to ask Maria if you can swing it over to Leslie if you want, okay? We were talking about the kids, certain cultures having greater losses during the pandemic, okay? And there's also a socioeconomic factor in many cases. And I'm curious, is the mental stress on kids, and let's just talk about the Latino kids in this case. Did you find out if it's worse for elementary kids who really can't comprehend why grandpa died? Okay. Or is it worse for high school kids who are, if I may, pretty screwed up anyway, most of the time. Okay. As they're trying to get their hormones together. Okay. Where's the biggest challenge? Okay. Grade level wise or school level wise, and Maria, maybe Leslie can answer that. I don't know, but I'll throw it to Maria. What'd you find, if anything?
Yeah, I could turn that over to Leslie, but I'll tell you that the survey did not include elementary. It was those kids could express. Yes, it was high school, secondary school, not just high school, but and the kids from middle school on up.
Yeah. Leslie, what are your thoughts on that? Okay, because elementary school kids are, they're sometimes more resilient, but they don't comprehend the world as well as maybe an adult might. I don't know.
Yeah, I think what we have seen is almost like a collision of different challenges. So, for example, I will look at it developmentally first. our younger ones. I mean, some of our students didn't interact with their peers for 2 years. And learning at the younger age happens through a social – it's a social construct. Learning is a social construct in general, but for our little ones, that is how they're able to learn, right? How to take turns. How do you regulate your body by watching other children, right? And the teacher modeling how to regulate the body. Language acquisition happens in the younger grades, and so it adds to frustration. And at that age, they don't have the tools and the skills yet fully developed to learn how to self-regulate. And so, right, we had to spend a lot of time last year with the younger ones, basic potty training, for example. You know, establishing boundaries and regulating your body. It's a lot of work to do that when you have, right, 20 to 25 students in a classroom when, before COVID, some of our students would access pre-K, right, or preschool. And so for us, right, we were missing that for 2 years. The other piece I would add is, and you spoke about this, Larry, is the grieving and loss, whether it be to death, whether it be to changes in the family that had to happen because, like, some parents still had to go to work, and so they had to figure out who to have the children go with, right, whether it was a new neighbor that they didn't know much about, but that they needed to rely on. And then at the other ages, you know, the teenage years, that is also think about a middle schooler who in the pandemic was in sixth grade and, you know, skipped seventh and eighth grade at home remotely potentially, and then went into high school. And so developmentally, from a psychosocial developmental perspective, there are delays there. And so now, right, they're going to show up behaviorally because we expect them to be ninth graders. And quite frankly, developmentally and in terms of interactions, hey, they're still a sixth grader. Those are the last interactions they remember, what they did when they were sixth graders. And so, you know, it's really complex. Oh, and then you overlay if any of our students, which I know many did, right, experience any additional crisis and trauma, right, that potentially can happen. Or the other thing that we're not talking about is the violence in some of our communities, right, which was real and raw. So that is a collision of a lot for our young people to manage.
Boy, it sure is, I got to tell you. What's the next step? Thank you, Leslie. What's the next step, Maria, with the continuing to build upon the information here? How do you use this? What's going to happen with all this? How do people access the information and use it? Maria.
Well, first of all, again, couldn't thank you enough for having Leslie and I on your show.
Love having you guys.
This is part of that next step is getting the information out. We've got a couple of other podcasts that we've been asked to be a part of. Dr. Leslie and I have been kind of put into the space of being the front folks for the study, and so we have a full communications plan to be able to do so and getting it out to the hands of various folks. And we're going to also be providing even a breakout session at our upcoming summit. You know, I can't say enough about that summit, right, Larry? So we, you
the
know,
only
we're doing
reason this in Puerto Rico is to get Leslie home to see her mom and dad. That's all. So or grandma.
You know, I shared the study just this past week as well with the Education and Labor Department chairperson because, you know, they're very interested and Dr. Cardona and his messaging about you know, the wellness of kids is paramount. And so this, you know, it all aligns, and we're just so grateful that we were able to, you know, commission the study, get the information, and now put it into the hands that decision makers can now plan with this perspective on how do we close these gaps in the findings and then how do we and use it to further, you know, our preparation as we move along. Like Leslie had said, you know, it's great right now that we have certain funding, but we also need to be very, very cognizant that these 2 years are compounded It's like, you know, you have to think that the stresses and the trauma, if not dealt with, will just continue. They'll be deep-rooted, and they'll show themselves in other ways down the line. So we need those funds to be able to, if it's not increasing more nurses or what have you, because teachers are, you know, the front runners in academics and teaching, and counselors are not psychologists, but we need those extra partners outside of the school yard, if you will, to be able to provide the service that they can, impact kids with, because that's their forte, so that way our teachers and our administrators can do the job that they've got to do, instead of thinking that, you know, we're the deliverer of all.
Excellent. And by the way, Maria, you know, we publish our magazine, Equity and Access, and you guys are welcome to put it in an article, put in the survey, whatever you will, but we'll help you any way we can. We'll include that in the next issue if you want.
Whatever you want to do. That's fabulous. I love it.
I'm going to send you an email, and if you I'll send it to both of you, and you know, if you guys want to do that, you'd be more than welcome to do that. We would love it. We would love to help you carry, get the word out there. We reach a lot of people, so in education world, so we'd love to do that. Okay, it's really kind of important, and I would be remiss if I didn't say that Secretary Cardona is a Connecticut lad, right, Leslie?
Yes.
Yeah.
He sure is.
Yeah, he certainly is. Okay, and so Connecticut gets top billing. That's all there is to it. All right, and I want to thank you both. This was absolutely excellent. I really appreciate you being here, and I'm going to be in touch with both of you about continuing and helping you get the word out. Is that okay, Leslie?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Okay, Leslie, I'm going to get in touch with you today. I want to follow up with you, too, on this thing you're doing with the Puerto Rico higher education teacher.
It's
crap.
Called
I think
paso, paso a paso.
Paso a paso. I'm going to talk to you about that. I'll probably call you later today.
You got it.
Okay,
yep, absolutely.
You. Maria, wherever you travel, and travel safe. Where are you going? Where are you heading?
I'm leaving California this morning and headed back to D.C.
Oh, my God, it's only 27 there. Maria, thank you for getting up so early.
Yeah,
wow.
You know, that's how much I love y'all.
Well, we
you're awesome.
You too.
You're
that,
awesome,
really,
Maria.
Thank you. Thanks for getting up so early. Okay?
Thank you.
Be good,
take
both
care.
Of you, and I'll be back in touch, okay? Fly safe, Maria.
Take care.
Be safe.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye, Les. Okay, Dr. Leslie Torres Rodriguez, who says that former beautifully than I do. She's the superintendent of Hartford, Connecticut schools, good town, okay? And it is a good town. And Dr. Maria Armstrong, okay? She's the executive director of ALAS, which is alasedu.org. Okay, check out what they do. It's great stuff. They got this survey. We're going to try to help them get it out there even further than they're doing. Okay, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. My voice is a little clearer. I'm very happy about that. Okay? So hey, check out what we're doing at ace-ed.org. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening.